We now come to Prime Minister's questions. Anne Davies.
Diolch yn fawr, Mr Llefarydd. Question number one.
Prime Minister.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. It was good to be back at this dispatch box yesterday for the first time in 16 years. And I understand I broke records, Mr Speaker, on my first day back for the longest statement in modern history. Thanks for your help with that, Mr Speaker. On my engagements this evening, I will join Their Majesties the King and Queen and President Macron at the British Museum to celebrate the arrival of the Bayeux Tapestry. Yeah. The loaning of the tapestry is a great example of French-British cooperation, the same cooperation that has helped us reduce summer small boat crossings to a 7-year low. Yeah. Mr Speaker, this morning I had meetings with ministerial colleagues and others. In addition to my duties in this House, I will have further such meetings later today.
Anne Davies.
May I firstly welcome the Prime Minister to his place. And I also welcome the Prime Minister's exemption of offences, including death by dangerous driving, for early prison release. But it comes after months of anguish for bereaved families, like my constituent Lisa Jones, whose husband Aaron was killed on the 23rd of December 2024. Will the Prime Minister now apologise to victims and their families put through significant distress throughout this process? And can he also assure them that, unlike the Labour precedent, there will be no government U-turn on this?
Well, Mr Speaker, can I start by paying tribute to the Honourable Lady for the way in which she has represented the family, the Jones family. And can I say, I do understand their anguish and that of many other families who found themselves in their position. I listened to what they were saying. I came in and asked for changes to the early release scheme, and we excluded rape, grooming and child sex offences. But hearing those voices, I wasn't satisfied, and I pushed the system to go further. And as a result of that, we are going further and excluding death by dangerous driving and other manslaughter offences. So I hope now she can give that certainty to the family, give them also my best wishes. I believe we're coming to the right position, and I can assure her that the Justice Secretary will be on top of this situation so that we ensure we are never in this position again.
Joe Stevens.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My Cardiff East constituents are pleased the government are funding extra neighbourhood policing for us, but Cardiff is the only capital city in the UK that doesn't have specific capital city police funding. So that means that neighbourhood policing, as a matter of course, are pulled away from the job that they should and need to do for my constituents. The Prime Minister knows Cardiff well. This historic anomaly is unfair and indefensible. So will he ensure that this problem is resolved once and for all by delivering capital city police funding for Cardiff?
Can I start, Mr Speaker, by paying tribute to my right honourable friend for everything she has done to stand up for her constituents, but more for Wales, and particularly in her role as Secretary of State for Wales. I do understand the point she's making, how big cities outside of London, and particularly a capital city, faces extra pressure that other police forces don't face. So I do understand the point, and we are reviewing the funding formula as part of a wider programme of police reform. I would be happy to engage with her on that very issue as part of that review. We have ensured that forces, including South Wales Police, are receiving a boost in their funding, but I do understand the position of cities that are, if you like, the focal point for many people to travel towards them, the extra pressure that results in. I know that from my previous job, and it's why I will pay very close attention to what she is saying.
Leader of the Opposition, Kemi Bain.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. And can I congratulate the Prime Minister on his stamina? 3 hours. Yesterday, he faced 125 questions from MPs across the House. Of course, Labour and the Lib Dems just wanted more government spending as taxpayers' money. But can he name a single spending request to which he answered no?
Prime Minister.
Well, what I can say to the Right Honourable Lady is I was quite clear in my statement about the need to get the welfare bill down. I do not want to be a Prime Minister that sees a situation where we have so many people in their 20s not in education, employment or training. I can't defend that. And I want to change that by giving more support to young people so that we start investing in their success, Mr. Speaker, rather than paying for failure, as we have done for many years under successive governments. Now, this seems to me, Mr. Speaker, to be one area where we can both engage in problem-solving rather than point-scoring, and I hope the Right Honourable Lady will take up my offer on that point.
Mr. Speaker, he avoided the question. He did not say no to a single spending request. And personally, I think it's delightful that he wants to make everyone happy, but a Prime Minister needs to be a leader, not a people pleaser. He's talking about working together on welfare. I already made that offer, but that does mean cuts. He wants to bring the welfare bill down by spending more money. Yesterday, the Prime Minister told the House that his summer of promises would be paid for by reprioritising within government. So what exactly has he cut?
Well, in terms of what has he cut, tax is the simple answer to that question. Mr. Speaker, within days of taking office, I indicated that we would remove VAT off electricity bills. And that, Mr. Speaker, will help people with the cost of living. And then, days later, with the support of my right honourable friend, the Chancellor, we said that there would be a cut in business rates for pubs, social clubs, live music, venues. So this government, lowering the cost of living, lowering the cost of business, and that is what we will continue to do. And can I say to the Right Honourable Lady, it has to be fully funded, and those commitments are fully funded, and we made a decision early to be clear about our priorities. Digital ID is not a priority for me or for this government. We reallocated the funding, and we made those commitments as a result.
Mr. Speaker, I asked what he cut. He says tax cuts. He hasn't said where the money is coming from. He talks about digital ID. Yeah, I know, he said digital ID, but the Chief Secretary to the former Prime Minister said that there was no money allocated for digital ID. You can't cut something that never existed in the first place. Mr. Speaker, Lord O'Neill, a close friend of the Prime Minister, said yesterday's statement in the Commons was the last thing investors wanted to hear. Lord O'Neill is a serious economist. He knows what he's talking about. And sure enough, yesterday, the cost of government borrowing rose to its highest in 18 years. How does he plan to tackle the government's rising debt costs?
Well, can I say to my to the Honourable Lady, Right Honourable Lady, I've worked with Jim O'Neill for 10 years. Jim O'Neill always gives me candid advice. We don't always agree, but he and I work together to turn Greater Manchester from a former industrial heartland to the fastest growing city region in the country. They complain, Mr. Speaker, but where are their ideas about growth? When they were in government, we saw 14 years of stagnant growth. We saw 14 years of debt rising as a percentage of GDP. I would say to her that the turbulence on global markets are because of that exposure that they left behind. We are turning that corner, Mr. Speaker.
In the first half of this year, we've had the fastest growth in the G7. Borrowing fell to its lowest level in 6 years. We're cutting the deficit faster than any other G7 country. I say to the party opposite, particularly to the right honourable lady, that is problem solving rather than point scoring.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know what any of that has to do with tackling the cost of increasing debt, Mr. Speaker. Collaborating with Jim O'Neill is not how we're going to get the debt cost down. And he said yesterday that the markets would be worried. The markets are clearly worried that we now have a spendthrift Prime Minister who wants to say yes to everyone but cannot tell us where the money is coming from. He needs to pay for all his new promises, and he has a choice: higher taxes, more borrowing, or spending cuts. Yesterday, he said change begins with honesty. So will he be honest and tell us? Is he preparing to raise taxes again, yes or no?
Can I say to the right honourable lady, I've already indicated my first moves were to cut tax, but I'm not going to do what any Prime Minister has done and is write the budget here. That will be the matter for my right honourable friend. But can I also say to her that he and I took a deliberate decision to set an early date for the budget so that we reduced the period for prolonged speculation of the kind that she is wanting us to indulge in today. But can I also say to her, and indeed to the whole of her new shadow cabinet, the majority of whom were part of a government that lasted for 49 days. A government, a short-lived government, that crashed confidence in the economy, hammered people's mortgages. She took a decision at the weekend. She removed a shadow chancellor who said that the Truss mini-budget was a mistake. And she replaced that shadow chancellor with one that helped to write the Truss mini-budget. And dare I remind the House, Mr. Speaker, the Leader of the Opposition herself is on record as saying that Liz Truss is 100% right. What other thing can I say, Mr. Speaker, in response to all of that, other than God help us?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Mr. Speaker, the whole House will have heard that he did not rule out tax rises. Instead, what he did was lots of point scoring. He says he wants new politics. He says he wants honesty. So why is he pretending that a junior minister wrote that budget? The fact is, gilt yields now, the cost of borrowing now, Mr. Speaker, the cost... They're laughing. I don't know why they're laughing, Mr. Speaker. The cost of borrowing now is far more than it ever was under Liz Truss. Mr. Speaker, the reason why that budget failed is because spending was announced before the money to pay for it, which is exactly what he is doing right now. He says it's the new politics, it's the same old Labour politics, tax and spend. He did not rule out tax rises, and what markets see is a government that cannot control its spending. So the markets will charge us more to borrow. That means higher mortgage rates for families. It makes life more difficult for businesses, and that pushes up the cost of living for everyone. Higher borrowing costs are the biggest threat to family finances. So will he rule out any more borrowing that will make people poorer?
Well, can I say to her something I said earlier? Debt was rising as a percentage of GDP under the government that she served in and her new shadow chancellor served in, who was hardly some PPS to the DEFRA secretary, with all respect to my right honourable friend, the DEFRA secretary. He was in the Treasury, Mr. Speaker, as a senior minister on the day of the Truss budget. She mentions mortgage rates. Well, that was the day that they spiked, and that was the day the British public were hammered by the previous government. We are taking the action needed to get debt down. This will be a government grounded in fiscal responsibility. It will stick to the fiscal rules, but at the same time, we will help reduce cost of living pressure on our constituents, and that's the approach that we will take, and that's the one I would suggest to the party opposite they should follow too.
Mr. Speaker, he is the Prime Minister now. He needs to answer the questions instead of spending time attacking someone who has more private sector experience than his entire cabinet. I asked him whether he would rule out more borrowing. He did not do so. We spend more servicing our debt than we do on defence, almost double. There is war in Europe, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday, Germany confirmed that Russia was behind the attack on Leipzig Airport. Tensions are so high, the director of the CIA flew to Moscow. We need the plan to hit 3% on defence now, but the armed forces won't know what they'll be getting until next July's spending review. There is a simple answer to this. Cut welfare spending and invest that money in our defence now. Mr. Speaker, the honeymoon is over. Isn't it time for the Prime Minister to ditch the vibes and get serious about defending our nation?
Well, can I start with the serious point that she made, Mr. Speaker, and that was the announcement by the German government yesterday in relation to the attack in Leipzig, and I think that should unite the House in sending complete condemnation of that attack by Russia, and complete solidarity in this House to support both Germany and to support Ukraine. And that position will not change. And it takes me to defence. The very reason I appointed this Chancellor to his position is because of his strong commitment to the defence of our country and to defence spending. We will fully fund the Defence Investment Plan, and at the spending review, we will set out a plan to meet our NATO commitments by 2035. There is no problem with our commitment to defence, Mr. Speaker. But more broadly, the Honourable Lady has made a lot of accusations there about what went wrong. But I go back to what was the position that she left. The country was not heading in the right direction. Now we are heading in the right direction. Yesterday, I laid out a clear, coherent, credible plan for growth based on 10 years of delivering it myself. This is grounded in reality. I want to take it to all parts of the country, and it's all about bringing back a sense of positivity, Mr. Speaker, a sense of possibility, growth in every postcode. Let this country believe in itself again. Let people have some hope, and that is what this government will do.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There is really promising and exciting evidence about the successful use of psychedelic therapy treatments for trauma, mental health, PTSD and end-of-life distress. Unfortunately, because many psychedelics are Schedule 1 controlled drugs, it makes access for clinical research bureaucratic and difficult. So would the Prime Minister and indeed members across the House consider supporting my amendments to the health bill next week when it returns, which would keep safeguards in place but remove some of the barriers to some of this important research and treatment?
Well, can I thank my honourable friend and pay tribute to his campaign on this particular issue? I was talking about getting the economy going in all parts of the country, innovation-led economy, and that applies to research and research into life sciences as well. And I believe strongly, Mr. Speaker, we must address all barriers to high-quality research in the life sciences. I'm happy to look at his amendment particularly, Mr. Speaker. I will ask a health minister to meet him to discuss it. But, of course, any changes must be evidence-based, proportionate and maintain our safeguards.
Sir Ed David, Leader of the Liberal Democrats.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Prime Minister said yesterday that Brexit ushered in a decade of low growth and stalled regeneration. He is right. Our economy is stuck in this mess, thanks to the Conservatives and the Leader of Reform and their terrible Brexit deal. Unless we grow the economy, there is no way we can end the cost of living crisis or cut the cost of borrowing for the government? The answer is staring him in the face. Join the single market, get a new deal with Europe, and cut costs for families, businesses and government. It's the bold step our country desperately needs. Will the Prime Minister take it?
Well, can I thank the Right Honourable gentleman, and I think he is absolutely right to share the analysis that I laid out yesterday. It's clear. The low growth we've had, the decade of low growth, has been partly a result of Brexit. And the sooner the party opposite accepts that, the more we can start to face up to Britain's future and where do we go from here. I do want a closer relationship. I will build on the work of my predecessor. There are issues facing British farming right now, and there are issues facing British steel right now. And the Made in Europe agenda could pose significant problems for British steel. So, as he will know, we are approaching a UK-EU summit in the next couple of months. It is imperative, I believe, that we work hard to get a good deal for British steel, for British farming, as part of that new deal that he talks about.
Sir Ed Davey.
Well, I hope at that summit he will negotiate a good deal for our country, our economy and our defence, and that means rejoining the single market. But moving on, Mr Speaker, North Devon's maternity unit has been closed for 3 weeks due to staff shortages. So women now have to travel up to 2 hours to give birth. When my kids were born, I can't imagine the extra stress and anxiety that would have caused us. Women are even being taught how to give birth in their cars. This should be unthinkable in our country. So will the Prime Minister commit to reopening North Devon's maternity unit in days, not weeks? And will he stop maternity closures across the country so expectant mums never have to face travelling such terrifying distances?
So let me give a direct answer. I will commit to reopening, but not within days. I don't think I am in a position to make that commitment today, Mr Speaker, but I am, again, in agreement with him that it's not acceptable for his constituents, for people living in the North Devon area, to have to travel that far. Apologies, I realise his constituency is somewhere else. So let me take that away, and let me also, though, say to him with honesty, there are structural issues here affecting maternity services across the UK, because this is not the only hospital where there have been difficulties. And I am aware from my former time as Secretary of State for Health that there have been long-standing shortages of midwives across the country, and I believe it is right that we look at all of those issues, but I can give him a guarantee that my right honourable friend, the Health Secretary, is looking at those issues following the recent maternity reviews that we've had.
Natasha Irons.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. A wise man recently called for good growth in every postcode and hope in every heart, and in Croydon, these cannot come soon enough. Gatwick expansion could provide Croydon's young people with world-class employment and training close to their home. But cuts to investment in rail infrastructure around East Croydon Station by the previous Conservative government means these opportunities could still be out of reach because Croydon's young people physically cannot get to them. So will the Prime Minister look again at the Croydon Area Modelling Scheme, back my campaign to unblock the Croydon bottleneck, and can he outline what his government is doing to give young people in Croydon East access to the opportunities that they deserve?
Yeah. Well, can I say to my honourable friend, we certainly will do that. I am in no doubt of the importance of good transport connectivity to young people's life chances, and I will ask Number 10 North to make contact with her so that we can get that scheme back on track. More broadly, we do need to change the way we support young people, and I've announced already a change to education so that we have a technical path for young people from 14, so that we give young people a path towards good T-levels, BTECs, work placements, degree apprenticeships, and we support them with travel costs, which is something that I did in Greater Manchester. Bringing back hope very much starts with our young people, Mr Speaker. Give them a clear path from school towards a good job
And that is something that the current education system that was put in place by the by Michael Gove has sadly failed to do.
Can I just say, I admire the Prime Minister, at least he's answering detailed questions. My problem is I'm not going to get through this, and both of us will be in trouble with backbenchers when we don't make it. Saoirse Eastwood.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the people of Northern Ireland are absolutely scundered. At the moment, we have poisonous parade and disputes and border poll spats. Meanwhile, the Northern Ireland Assembly has no budget. Now, Prime Minister, whenever we met last week, I think there was an acknowledgement that we can either have an unreformed Stormont or we can have sound public finances in Northern Ireland, but we cannot have both. Alliance have led the way on calls for changing our broken system of government in Northern Ireland. This is your chance to leave a legacy of functioning government in Northern Ireland. Will he act?
I will work with her and her colleagues on precisely that. I was in Northern Ireland with the Northern Ireland Secretary last week. Our first responsibility is to get Stormont government up and running and functioning properly with a budget. I've empowered the Northern Ireland Secretary to go into talks to resolve that issue, and the broader issues about reform, we can continue that conversation once we've got that in place.
So, Dean Calvert-Sign.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm delighted that North Somerset is finally getting two fantastic new stations at Pill and Portishead with the reopening of the railway line. But, and I hate to sound greedy, with Bristol Airport's potential expansion on the horizon, it risks becoming one of the worst connected major airports in the country. Will my right honourable friend, the Prime Minister, agree that now we need a proper mass transit system for North Somerset and Wecker, linking Felton, the new Woodspring development, Long Ashton and the wider economic area?
Well, I know my honourable friend worked hard on getting those new stations. People in Portishead and Pill have waited far too long for those new stations, but they're now on the way. And can I say, it does reflect what I was saying to the House yesterday, the big cities of England, and I'm talking about Leeds, talking about Bristol. They should have mass transit systems, Mr. Speaker. And I will work with the wonderful Mayor of the West of England, Helen Godwin, to make progress on that, to connect Bristol, its new arena, the station, the development Templemeads, into a mass transit system that takes Bristol forward.
Stanley Cotton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I welcome the Prime Minister to his place? Now, the Prime Minister knows the importance of protecting local greenbelt. Indeed, he made it a key part of his by-election campaign in Makerfield. It's incredibly important in my constituency too, where there's an 85% increase in the housing target and we are 89% greenbelt. The Prime Minister says that he wants to do things differently and share the burden across the country. Will he meet with me to discuss a new path forwards?
Well, I thank him for his question. It is about getting a balance, isn't it? Yes, we need to protect Greenbelt where we can, but we also need to build the homes that people need. And it is about striking a balance. In Greater Manchester, I always took a brownfield first approach, and that's what I will do. And I've asked the Chancellor to work with my Cabinet colleagues to release more public land so that we can build more homes on brownfield land. But I do understand the concerns that he's raising. We'll ask the Housing Minister to meet him to see if we can further build some common cause. But there is a balance to be struck, and I would say to the party opposite, it's important they do not turn their face away from building the new homes this country needs.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and welcome back. And can I also welcome the Prime Minister to his role? We have many shared passions, sport, music, and a deep sense of community. I know we both have a strong desire to ensure that everyone in our country has a sense of pride, identity, and belonging, that everyone feels safe and no one feels lonely. But sadly, that isn't always the case. So what steps is he taking to support people in communities like Spen Valley who may feel isolated or are dealing with antisocial behaviour such as speeding and dangerous driving, inappropriate use of e-bikes and off-road e-scooters and off-road bikes and fireworks to give residents confidence that their concerns are being taken seriously?
Well, I do thank my honourable friend for this question, because she's speaking for many people at home who'll be nodding away when she says what she said. I spoke to these issues in the Makerfield by-election, where we had an illegal waste tip that just looked like nobody was taking any action on. Fireworks, I think there is a case for going further, regulating those. But on antisocial behaviour more broadly, I supported Greater Manchester Police
in taking the toughest possible approach to rooting out antisocial behaviour through Operation Vulcan. I think it can be extended elsewhere. We shouldn't accept that this is just the daily norm in communities. I happen to support the broken window theory of policing. If you let small things go, bigger things come along, and we should change the way we think about neighbourhood policing as the Home Secretary is doing.
Liz Saville-Roberts.
Diolch yn fawr iawn, Lefarydd. Our new Plaid Cymru government has laid the foundations for change, showing what Wales can achieve with the powers we have.
The next election, then?
The Prime Minister says devolving powers means better public services, and I agree with him. But policing in Wales is still controlled from afar here in Westminster. So will he please put his devolution instincts into practice and confirm that devolving policing will be on the table when he meets the First Minister next month?
The approach I will take, Mr Speaker, and I say this to the Honourable Lady, and we met the Deputy First Minister last week at Port Talbot, where proposals come from the Senate government, we will give them a fair consideration. We do need to work together to get growth going. We do need to secure the future of Port Talbot together. And if that can be done with more locally devolved power across Wales, then I am absolutely ready to work with her and the First Minister on that.
Tamanji Singh Desi.
Thank you very much. Mr Speaker, the British people should be under no illusion that the nation faces a significantly increased threat level, especially from Russia, but also we have a US leadership for whom European security is no longer a focus or priority. And that is why it is imperative that we invest in our armed forces in the here and now, rather than be sorry later. Indeed, defence is definitely one area where vibes alone just isn't going to be enough. So rather than kick the can down the road, waiting for a fiscal event in the future, in a future year, will the Prime Minister urgently commit to charting a pathway to reach 3% of GDP spend on defence by 2030, which, as his Chancellor rightly noted, is critical to keep our country safe?
Well, I've made that commitment, made it very clear, Mr Speaker, and I have done for a considerable period of time. And I was in Ukraine last week for a very specific reason, to repeat it on the world stage there, so the Honourable Gentleman can be absolutely sure of that. But I also think, alongside our commitment to defence, we also have to build the resilience of Britain. We need to ensure that the maximum amount of that funding committed to the Defence Investment Plan goes back into the reindustrialisation of our communities, that we do more to maintain sovereign manufacturing and production capability here. And this will be a theme of my government, making sure that the British taxpayers' money goes in to supporting industry in our own country to make us more resilient going into the future.
Yeah. Andrew George.
Mr Speaker, my community-led homes private members bill aims to help combat widening inequality in the UK. In Cornwall alone, during the last decade, through tax loopholes, over £500 million of taxpayers' money has been handed out to second home owners, while the housing problems of locals have got significantly worse, and the planning system, which is fueled by greed rather than need, it simply allows land value speculators to fill their boots while the housing problems get worse. So will the Prime Minister meet with me so that we can identify tools within my private member's bill to empower communities to address that desperate need?
Yeah. Prime Minister.
Well, can I say to the Honourable Gentleman, I've worked with him over many years, and I remember in the coalition years he didn't always take that line, and I respect him for that. I will look very closely at his private member's bill. How about this? I will agree here and now to a meeting with him and all Cornish MPs to discuss what we might also do alongside his bill, what we might do to put powers and levers within the devolution deal to deal with those very specific issues he's just raised in relation to second homes in Cornwall.
Helena Dolihall.
So excited about the return of the Bayer tapestry.
coming back to our shores for the first time in almost 1,000 years, and testament to this Labour government's work to strengthen our relations with European neighbours. Hastings has often been at the centre of historical events, but we have not felt the benefits, and we rank in the bottom 10 places nationally for social mobility. Thanks to my campaign, the young people I represent will get free priority access to the Tapestry exhibition and not be priced out by the cost of a ticket. Excellent. Does the Prime Minister agree with me that this is great news and that the British Museum must do all it can to ensure as many people from my area can see the exhibition?
Yeah. Well, can I say to my honourable friend, I will relay that very message to the former Chancellor of the Exchequer, who runs the British Museum tonight. And I hope I will do so with the support of the benches opposite, that we want the maximum number of kids to have access to stand in front of that tapestry while it's here in the UK. It's a major moment in our island's history, and it's such a powerful one. They learn about it in school. They should be able to stand in front of it. And can I just credit her for the amazing campaign that she has run on this issue. I know her school children in her own constituency will be there, but I can hear in her voice she wants it for every child in this country, and let's see what we can do.
Danny Kruger.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I applaud the Prime Minister's focus on civil society and on support for young people, but the fact is that in his time as Mayor of Greater Manchester, youth employment there did not improve. In fact, it got worse. And no amount of taxpayer-funded support is going to fix that. So will the Prime Minister accept that the way to get young people into work is to provide meaningful tax cuts for businesses and also to ensure that people who can work should be working?
Yeah. I indicated that earlier today, Mr. Speaker. Young people who can work should be working. I believe they want to work. The question is, have we always given them the support that they need? As Mayor of Greater Manchester, proudly, I delivered a huge increase in the work placements attached to T levels that benefited young people. I introduced a free bus pass for 16 to 18 year olds to connect them to opportunity. And actually, the rise in NEETs was not the same in Greater Manchester as in other parts of the country. So we might want to go back and check that. On this issue, let's work to get the best possible package we can to support our young people. It is too hard growing up as it is at this moment in time. We can make it better if we do it as a cross-party, with cross-party support. That's the best message we could send to the next generation.
Mohammed Yazin.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Labour government has already delivered real investment for Bedford, including our community diagnostic centre, urgent care centre, and funding for the paternal walk-in centre. I was pleased to open Bedford's new mental health crisis house this summer. But, Mr. Speaker, the inpatient mental health services my constituents lost in 2017 have never been replaced. So will the Prime Minister commit to working with me to take the next steps towards restoring adult and young people's inpatient mental health provision in Bedford so that my constituent can access the right care in the right place at the right time?
That last point, Mr. Speaker, is the point. And with mental health services, we have to do better on that. And the Health Secretary absolutely agrees with this. It's why we committed in the summer to community-based mental health provisions, to make it easier for people to access that provision. I am aware of his concerns about Bedford Hospital. I will work with the Health Secretary to address them with him.
Jack Rankin.
Frankly, Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister did not answer any of the questions the Leader of the Opposition put to him on spending. Over the summer, the markets were clearly anxious when he failed to articulate the fiscal rules to Victoria Derbyshire. In his statement yesterday, he waxed lyrical about a decade where we had a three-day week and blackouts, presumably because he liked the music. But we now know what the international capital markets have made of that. Can he now, in front of this House, confirm what the fiscal rules are and categorically say that the government will stick to them?
No borrowing to fund day-to-day spending, debt falling as a percentage of GDP by the end of the Parliament, and yes, we will.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
In High Peak and across the country, we suffered devastating wildfires this summer. I'm grateful to the Prime Minister for the action he took, including the temporary ban on disposable barbecues. But we have to face the fact that our climate is changing and communities like mine are suffering the consequences. Will the Prime Minister set out what more he will do to ensure that we are better prepared to prevent and tackle wildfires next summer, including making the ban on disposable barbecues permanent?
Well, can I say, Mr. Speaker, my honourable friend was an important voice in the summer, and I'm aware of the problems in his constituency on the border of Greater Manchester, and these have been problems we've seen over a number of years now. He was right to call out the need for a ban on temporary barbecues, disposable barbecues. More broadly, this is a bigger challenge. So I'm going to call a wildfire summit. He'd be welcome to attend. I think our fire and rescue services are not set up properly for the changing climate. We do not have the most modern equipment. We do not have aerial support to tackle wildfires as we see in France or Italy or other countries. And when it comes to the latter part of this year, with the flooding that is expected, it's not even a statutory responsibility of our fire and rescue services. If you will join me at that summit, we can make further progress.
Slogan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Energy Secretary will shortly choose between six NESO pathway options for the Strategic Special Energy Plan, which will shape where and when energy infrastructure is developed over the next 25 years. ScotWind is key to Scotland's industrial future. It represents £78.5 billion of potential investment, part of an overall package that Crown Estate Scotland estimates could support more than 21,000 jobs. But, Mr. Speaker, the GMB Union in Scotland has warned, among others this week, that the wrong pathway could deny energy transition opportunities for our world-class, skilled and experienced Scottish energy workers and industries. So, after the betrayal of the last administration at Grangemouth and Ardersier, can the Prime Minister commit today to selecting a pathway that enables the full ScotWind pipeline, including floating offshore wind and the grid investment, to deliver Scotland's energy potential?
Well, can I say to the honourable gentleman, this is exactly what I'm talking about when I'm talking about supporting industrial transition so that we can reindustrialise Scotland and other parts of the country. It has to be done in a pragmatic way so that we can make that transition work rather than being too ideological about it as other parties are. So I will work with him. I intend to visit Scotland soon to look in detail at the issues in the Aberdeen community because I know they've struggled with the impact of transition. Let's see what we can do to build common cause, and let's look at Grangemouth too, which could be the home of sustainable aviation fuel. I'm interested in making progress on all of these issues, Mr. Speaker, and I will work with him on that.
Final question, Samantha Niblett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I congratulate the Prime Minister on his first PMQs? It is my first PMQ too. I also want to declare an interest. I'm the chair of the APPG for Sex and Reproductive Health. My and Cindy Gallup's campaign for lifelong sex education has seen tremendous response and support from many, including professionals across occupational health, medicine, nursing, public health, academia, the NEU and the police. I have discovered that shame, guilt and embarrassment around talking about sex and body parts like penis and vagina is even leading to late diagnosis of health conditions and illnesses such as cancer for many in my constituency of South Derbyshire and across the country. Something I've spoken about with the Eva Peel and constituent Louise Clark, a GP who specialises in cancer of the vulva. They're really great for my campaign. So as September is National Gynecological Cancer Month, and as the summer of sex comes to a close, will the Prime Minister agree to meet with me to talk about my campaign?
I will indeed, Mr. Speaker, and she's been raising important issues that others haven't spoken about, and it's very clear to me that her summer was more exciting than mine.
That completes Prime Minister's questions. We'll let the front bench change. Over.